you and I both had big weeks, and your big week had to do with you going away and being on a retreat from the places that you normally were. And my big week had to do with me doubling down on the things that already exist in my life. And the coffee shop that I typically go to every morning is no longer the coffee shop that I go to every morning, but it is the coffee shop that I own. And that was not something that I anticipated happening. That's a big change for me.
That's so cool. So tell me about your intentions for the space. Clearly, like, this is a place you often have gone to work, right?
Yeah.
You get your coffee, you do your thing in the morning.
Yeah, absolutely.
Is that an intended use case for this place for you going forward?
It really is. So the kind of very brief backstory of why I'm in this position is because when my wife and I moved to California, and specifically this city that I live in, Redding, a year and a half ago, we really felt like this was some place that we wanted to be home for a while. And as we've seen it grow, we've thought that we wanted to be part of watching it grow and helping it grow. And so we've been looking around for an opportunity to do so. The thing that my wife, Christine, thought would be most interesting would be to find some way to create a place for people to stay in the city, because there aren't a lot of hotels there. Well, let me say that again. There's hotel, and that's really it. There's a lot of motels and a lot of Airbnbs, but as we discovered as we came to the city a few times before we moved here, Airbnbs aren't a great place to rely on when you're trying to make a trip back, because you think, oh, let's go stay there again, and you find that it's booked or it's no longer listed or whatever. So she started thinking about a place that we could have. As we were talking about what that would look like to do that, she started dreaming about a space that was hotel units on the second floor and a restaurant or coffee shop on the first floor. Sort of this fun intersection between the place that exists for people coming into town and the place that exists for people who live here and are always in town. And as somebody who goes to a coffee shop and has met so many of my friends through a coffee shop here, I see the benefit of it. And in fact, I've been recognizing that basically every good thing that has come out of my life here in Redding has come from interactions that began at the coffee shop. One of my closest friends who has become a business partner and a person who I've met many, many other close friends through, I met him at the coffee shop. I was sitting there, and he was sitting there, and he was sitting there with friends, and I was sitting there alone, and we talked a little bit. And then I was sitting there and he was sitting there another day and we talked a little bit more, and it grew into a really serious, great friendship that is one of my best friendships I have.
Rewind 5 years and replace coffee shop with on Twitter.
Yeah, right.
And is that not like a definitive statement about like being in a new era of making connections and doing this work? And isn't it interesting that like you're talking about like a physical space in a physical community now and not a virtual one?
Yeah, this is something that I've been recognizing is as I've been thinking so much about space lately, and even in our last conversation about space, the reason that I like Twitter is because it was and still can be, but certainly isn't as good of a coffee shop, a virtual coffee shop.
Uh-huh.
That's what it used to be and what I wish it still was. And I think that even using that metaphor, you know, if I walked into a coffee shop and half of the people were being angry about politics and the other half of the people were on some crazy witch hunt, I would not visit that coffee shop again, even if it was the best coffee shop with the best people. And that's the problem that I'm suffering right now online. But this is, I live in a small town. At the time, there was one coffee shop. Now there's like three. And that was the place to go to meet people. When I came here and visited, I was given one of those funny connections. You know, sometimes you'll say, I'm visiting the place. And someone you know will say, oh, I know someone that lives there. And then you'll meet somebody. And that meeting that happened between some people who are now my friends and myself happened at this coffee shop. So, you know, this space actually means a lot to me. And thinking about having a space that is under my ownership is a really interesting thing. And part of the reason why I bought it is because I found out that another person who was interested in purchasing it was interested in purchasing it to shut it down and turn the entire building into a private office space, which was so sad to me because I think of these things as so important. Now, I want it to be profitable, But I've spoken to several friends of mine who own coffee shops, and I am told that it is not the most profitable business, which I know. It's sort of a thing that I'm doing for many, many reasons, with the primary one not being to turn a big, great profit in the coffee shop. And a friend of mine who runs a coffee shop in Birmingham, Alabama, told me, you know, if all that you're trying to do is get rich, a coffee shop is not the decision for you. But if you want to own a piece of real estate in the city that is a primary community gathering point, there is no better buy than a coffee shop. And I completely agree with that. And I think that that is something that really appeals to me, of putting my own thumbprint, and for Christine to put her own thumbprint, on a gathering point in the city that we live in.
That's such an inspiring reason to make a big transaction like that, to me. It's like, it's so civic minded. It's so about supporting the whole community horizontally rather than just like taking something out of it vertically, which is so often like a business plan looks like.
Yeah. And I think that my wife and I actually recently experienced that in the city. It wasn't as big of a deal, quote unquote, as if I would have lost this coffee shop, which would have been very sad to me. But there was a little grocery store, a little local grocery store that we went to all the time. It was actually closest to our house on the road home from downtown. And a few months ago, it closed down because the owner was retiring and he sold it. And the person who bought it was the competing grocery store. And that competing grocery store has another store only a few blocks away. So they purchased it with the express intention of closing it down and having less competition for the store that they had. And it made me sad because I always want the city that I live in to be growing, not having less option, not having less to do in it, not having less business. And so as I watched that grocery store close down, you know, I had no interest in owning a grocery store, but I saw an echo of that in this potential loss of a coffee shop, and I just didn't want that to happen. So yeah, I'm very curious about this. It is the place that I go daily. Before we recorded this today, that's where I was. And I typically get there at 7 a.m. when it opens up. And I know the other people that are there at 7 a.m.
Do you have any thoughts about the vibe in the room as far as technology goes? I feel like every coffee shop that's not Starbucks that I ever go to has a different, slightly different, publicly posted philosophy on like using devices in the coffee shop.
Yeah, so actually right now the coffee shop has one of those strict, we don't have Wi-Fi policies. Uh-huh. And you are supposed to go in and get a cup of coffee and talk to other people. I would say that part of that is not just because they want to encourage community, but because they don't want to pay for Wi-Fi,
right?
Which is a move. Honestly, to me, that doesn't bother me as much. I'm kind of the mind that anything that gets more people in the doors and more people feeling like this is a space that they can use for whatever reason they can use it is good. So I want there to be Wi-Fi. I mean, I sit there and type away on my iPad every day. It doesn't matter to me that there's no Wi-Fi because I have LTE, but I don't think that makes me any less social. And I don't think that me taking up a seat has been a detriment to the coffee shop in any way. I don't think that it will ever become a work hub because of its kind of small nature, but I'm fine with people using as much technology as they want and having as many work meetings as they want in the space, because to me, that is part of having a viable third place in your life, is that you know you can go there to get whatever you want to do done. So I'm not going to have any crazy policies. In fact, I think I'll be expanding its technological ability as I can.
But it sounds like you also are interested in it as a gathering place for people to like do stuff in person. What kinds of things do you imagine, or is it really just like getting together for coffee that you want to optimize for?
Yeah. So I think for me, it is kind of whatever it wants to be. I think that there's some fun opportunities to do interesting things like classes or gatherings or whatever, but I'm happy to let that grow a bit organically and just let it take shape and continue being the coffee shop that it is.
Well, so how about that aspect, the work aspect of it for you? Like, this is a non-digital project and you're looking at probably like countertops and, you know, industrial coffee grinders and things that are not, you know, downloadable prosumer software.
It feels great. I think that it's actually kind of a nice thing to be thinking about while I do a lot of the other work digitally. You had said that the last time that we talked. You wish you wouldn't have chosen to make the thing that was a play space also into a workspace.
Yes.
And for me, I'm not unhappy with my ways that I'm already using technology, both for work and for enjoyment. But it is kind of nice to be able to move away from that completely and have something very physical to look forward to. I have to say, I have no plans or intentions to like make this my full-time thing. I'm not going to be behind the bar pulling an espresso shot anytime soon.
Right.
It has a great manager in place, and that manager has expressed to me that he's not going anywhere anytime soon. And that was why I felt like I could own a coffee shop, because he exists and he'll be doing a lot of that stuff. So it's kind of a thing where I'm putting a lot of time into it to make it continue existing, and then I will be able to put less time into it. It's always going to be something in my mind now, right? It'll always be something that I can turn to and think about and improve. I'm going to have a night probably next week or this week where I sit down with a couple of the employees and we dream up a new menu, a new food menu, and go buy some groceries and start making some new toasts. And that feels way different than anything else that I ever do, because usually when I dream or strategize, it's on a whiteboard or in a Ulysses sheet, and it never turns physical. It never, ever becomes a physical thing. But this will become a physical toast, you know, that I will eat. And that feels quite different in its own self. So I feel like there's something kind of good about giving a part of my mind to something really physical. But I think that we will still continue to see my life being a majority of the time lived in the digital realms, even with this existing. Hello, internet friends. It's Drew, and I want to tell you about Keyhouse. There's a quote from Kurt Vonnegut that I read, tucked away in an essay he wrote about the seasons, where he said that he thought that the idea of four seasons was a lie. Instead, we should have six. Fall doesn't move to winter, and winter doesn't move to spring. Instead, he thought the season should be like so. Summer, fall, locking, winter, unlocking, and spring. I believe there's a beautiful poetry to the idea that creation itself requires a time of unlocking before anything of substance can bloom. And perhaps you're listening to this message right now, stuck between what you're doing and what you want to do for the rest of your life, realizing that you might be in that cruel season of unlocking too. Find your own space for unlocking. Go to Keyhouse, KEYHOU.SE, and let's find the key.
You see, though, kind of how I'm driving at the topic of taking time offline or taking more time offline.
Yeah.
That's the thing I want to talk about, because I just did a bunch of that. But I think that there are multiple ways into it. And I really think it's like, you know, especially having just talked about our work in the last episode, you moving some of your work into this physical toast space is significant. The way you just put it, I found really interesting that, like, even while you're doing most of your work digitally, like, there's still this other place in your mind that's offline and is, you know, in the world of the senses, like food and the smell of coffee and like all these real experiences and, like, you know, human eye contact. That's been a very intense focus. That aspect of my life experience has been a very intense focus for the past week. And coming back online in the last 24 hours has also been interesting in a new way.
Yeah.
I've done like multiple week or longer stretches of not being on my devices, but never really coming from something this purpose built to like disconnect me from the day-to-day distractions. And it feels very different coming back. It's interesting to come back to like this world of beta testing iOS 12 that I have been in since just before I left, and have my phone be telling me how much I'm using it and being very honest for the first time with myself. You know, we haven't fully said, I don't think, at any point in our conversations here, like, I wish I used digital technology less, or I wish I was online less. Like, I don't think we've ever like out and out said that, have we? And I'm not so sure that I do, but having just used it less for a long time, I feel like way more put together. I don't know.
Screen time has been such an interesting example of a tool that helps you understand with real cognizance the ways that you're using your device, and you can no longer lie to yourself about it. And I think that that's what we do. I think that all of us have a belief in our mind that we use our technology in this way, and then you actually look at the hard numbers and you see that that's not quite the case. And the thing that I've been using, it's the one that basically makes it so that every time I click on Twitter, it wags a little finger at me and tells me that I've reached my limit for the day. And then it gives me the option to open it back up or not. And those kinds of little features have really made it clear to me how often I do these things, because if you try to open an app and the experience interrupts you, you are more present in that moment than you might have been if you would have just opened it and mindlessly browsed through it. So that's been really good. And part of what I recognized in having these app limits is that I often open my phone for no reason at all other than to distract myself. And I do not like that reality. I love opening my phone when I'm searching for something. I love opening my phone when I'm learning something. I do not love opening my phone when I'm distracting myself. And it has made me more aware of those distractions that I take, not on a daily basis, not even on an hourly basis, on an extremely, extremely regular basis. So now I am doing that less. I certainly still can't say I'm not doing it at all, but I'm doing it much less. And there are moments in my life where instead of opening my phone to browse through something, I do nothing. And I kind of forgot that nothing is good. And I feel like that is part of what you've just spent a week doing, where I've spent it in micro moments. You took the macro route and had a 7-day time for nothing.
Yeah, the retreat was really amazing. I am almost hesitant to try a recap, but what I'll say is that I have been practicing various Buddhist forms of meditation for about 12 years. Like, high school was when I found out about it and read my first book about it, and that's when my practice nominally started. It may be fairer or more accurate to say that I've gone long stretches of time in my life without meditating, because I've had like these phases where it was something that I really could pour a lot of time and energy into, and other phases where I couldn't, and a lot of phases where I wouldn't, where I would come up with excuse after excuse for why it wasn't the right thing for me to do. But there have been some pretty intense periods of practice, particularly in college. There was a group. At the time, it was a bunch of independent undergraduate concentrators under the guidance of a religious studies professor in a program called Contemplative Studies, which is now, in the last few years, a full-blown department that undergrads at Brown can major in, which is so amazing. But in my day, you had to kind of make up your own concentration in it and propose it to deans who gave you permission to do it as your concentration. Seated silent meditation was part of the curriculum, and the rest was sort of academic, first person and more traditional, like research and, you know, reading and other kind of comparative religious studies and music studies, other kinds of contemplative practices. And so my practice was pretty intense at that time. And in the period following graduating from college, I don't know if it's a coincidence or not, but as my sort of internet life took off, my meditation life really went on the back burner. And it has come back up a few times, particularly in the last couple of years, since like a daily Jewish practice has become something that I've been trying to incorporate. Figuring out how to work in that really not traditionally Jewish kind of meditation to a more like formal Jewish prayer practice has been pretty difficult. I hadn't really found a good way to do that yet. But by now, a week-long Jewish silent meditation retreat is enough of a thing that I could find out about it, sign up for it, and go. And I sort of did that with the intention of figuring out how to mix these things together. And it happened in a way more profound way than I was even ready for, like to the point where I began to see that kind of meditation that I have practiced for like, you know, a third of my life as an intrinsically Jewish way of being, and sort of not see these practices of mine as separate anymore, and see the meditation part as the core of it. That, like, if I don't have hours to do my practice in a day, I should spend my time on the meditation part. Like, that's the real key part of it. And, you know, we could talk about meditation itself, but really what I would say for now is that the reason I find it beneficial to practice this kind of meditation in my life is because it helps me make choices better. Mm. It helps me like understand what I really want to be doing in each moment. And that's the thing that I have really been honing down to a really fine point over the last week. I have like also introspected a lot and brought up a lot of really awesome, sometimes painful, but really beautiful personal stuff that I'm able to work with now. And I definitely believe in that as a core benefit of the practice. But I'm back at like my computer for the first time since all of that. And really the way I feel about it now is like so much clearer about what it is I want to do and what matters to me. Yesterday, you texted me, how is technology feeling? And my answer remains true, even though I've been like updating all of my devices and like really fiddling a lot, like because, you know, I have a week of updates and new betas and stuff. My answer remains true. And it's that I find it, I feel neutral about it. And I don't find it particularly interesting because in the state of mind that I've been in for the past week, all the like glowy, colorful, attractive, addictive things about an iPhone are, I mean, everything else around me is equally glowy and colorful and interesting. So that makes really clear to me that it's just the habits, like the ones you were just describing, of like just going into something to find something to do. Like that's the sticky stuff. That's the addictive stuff. And having kind of cleaned out my patterns, I feel right now like I can build whatever patterns I want. And I don't want to rebuild most of the digital patterns that I had. But early on in today's call, I referred to something slightly more complicated about my relationship to digital devices on this retreat than you might have thought. And I think it is a really fascinating distinction that I've discovered. Here's how I use digital devices on the retreat. First of all, I wasn't supposed to.
Okay.
The terms of the silence that we had not like sworn to uphold or whatever, but like we had agreed to terms of silence where that involved no like reading or writing, period, because it was supposed to be just about being present with whatever's happening. And, you know, we needed a watch some of the time. So I had my Apple Watch, but it was on airplane mode and I only wore it to sleep and to wake me up and for a couple of activities where we needed to kind of go away from the group and still need to know roughly what time it was. So it was just a digital watch for me for a few days. And I had it in the back of my mind that it was there, but like I wasn't getting any notifications. I wasn't wearing it during the day. So it wasn't of use to me the way it usually is. However, there were a fair number of people in the group visibly taking notes like on paper at some points, particularly during the lectures when there was like information being given over. But I think some people were even doing a little bit of journaling about what was happening to them. And the more I watched that, the more it seemed fair to me. You know, like I recognized in myself a tendency to like obsess over some idea that's in my mind that's coming up in the course of like, let's say on Shabbat, like, which is a time when I also like basically adhere to these same rules. As far as writing, I mean, I read all day on Shabbat. And so not being able to do that was hard. But like, as far as like writing down stuff that comes up, I often have the experience that if I'm thinking of something or if I've come up with something, something like very exciting to me, some idea, holding it in my head to remember to write down after the period of no writing is over is so distracting and so noisy and overwhelming. And if I can just get it out in like 30 seconds of breaking the rules, the rest of the time will benefit from that. So that's how I interpreted what all these other people were doing. And I just let it be for a while, but then things started to come up. In the silence, I, you know, made a lot of space in my mind, and then my mind got bored or, you know, or, you know, or just like had some space to like kind of play around that it didn't have before when all this other stuff was weighing me down. And I started to come up with ideas upon ideas. The first being how I would tell the story of this retreat on my blog, which I'm going to do. And then another idea that I haven't done enough of the work to put together to like really tease yet, but I guess I decided that one of the ways to kind of focus my internet habit, my long-standing internet habit of like making things and putting them on the internet, and also just to support my lifelong writing habit, which I want to do, I decided that I could do that and support my meditation practice by starting a blog, a daily-ish blog about my daily-ish practice of meditation, which I'm going to do. And it's not just going to be a blog. I'm going to do it on micro.blog, and I'm going to use their podcast thing. They have like an app that you can connect to your hosted micro.blog blog for like recording short audio things on an iOS device and posting them to your blog. And I've decided that I want to do like a 300-word post every day and record it and post like the text and have the audio in the post as a podcast. And I, like, I've got a name, I've got a domain. I'm going to do this soon. I don't know exactly when, but like as soon as I have the time and space. But so anyway, I was coming up with all these like really normal ideas for me to have blog posts and whole blogs and everything. Like, this is very day-to-day stuff for me to be thinking about, but it was much more wholesome stuff than I'm coming up with these days. And I was really excited about that. I didn't want to lose it. So I considered how I was going to write it down. And I did have a notebook that I considered using, but I was like, yeah, I'd really like to have this in like already digitized form. And then I looked down at the floor at my watch when I got back for the evening one day to put it on to go to sleep. And I decided to open up Drafts on the watch and scribble with my fingers, like the basic outline of the idea. And, you know, completely offline. And it worked beautifully. And I think it opened me up to the idea that that was something I was allowed to do now. So like the more ideas I came up with or like aspects of the same idea I would come up with, I would find myself like running back to my room when we had a break period to like go scribble drafts into my watch, which was a little ridiculous, but also because of the way I was coming up with them as these just like one sentence things that I had to remember, there was still this practice of like holding it in my mind and turning it over for a long time until I had the time to go scribble it down, and then I would. And then as soon as I did, it would be out of my mind and it would be free and clear. And like I could go back to concentrating on what was happening in that moment. And it felt like a totally fair thing to do. And then like at another point, we had a chanting practice every morning that's kind of loosely based on like the actual like singing praise part of the morning prayer service that everybody does traditionally. But it was like really much more ecstatic, like loud singing, which is something that I've done fairly often, but really nice to do every day in a formal way. And there were some tunes that I got from that that I loved that I just needed to keep. And I would go back after chanting and I would launch Just Press Record on my watch and sing it and just put the watch down. My phone was off for 8 days. I don't think I've ever had my phone straight up off for 8 entire days before. So my watch was just sitting there as this like the coolest digital watch in the world. It was like a clock and an alarm clock, but I could also write and record sounds with it if I needed to.
Yeah.
And I could have done it in the middle of the Sahara Desert with no cell service too, and it would have worked perfectly, and it did. And so like this morning as my computer was updating, I sat with my phone and kind of collated the 27 drafts that I had created on my watch into one draft and then kicked them over to IA Writer. And now I have an outline for like a great blog post, like one of those, you know, staple posts of my personal blog where I talk about like some big religious experience that I had and what it changed in me and in my life. You know, there's been like six of those over the course of having this blog. And like the next one is like pretty much like, you know, like I'm ready to turn it into a real draft right away, thanks to having this tool with me. But I was so, so glad that it wasn't an internet connected device
right
at the time. And I think that's the thing that's most interesting about this is like, I completely separated the functionality of the devices that we use and love and talk about all the time from like any network connected component. And it felt spiritually, like metaphysically different to use it that way. And I found that really significant. I found that to be really significant in the ways I think about the work and what I make as a writer, because that's what I was doing. I was doing the act and job of writing with a watch, which is incredible in its own right. But also, I've thought for so many years about being a writer. I've thought about it as an online job. And I have just proven to myself that even though I use computers to do the job in a way that I need, like I wouldn't be able to do the job as well on paper as I do on computers, but it can still be a technical, personal, like solitary writerly job the way that writing used to be, and not have to be this like social, you know, I mean I don't even have words for it anymore, the way that like most writer jobs feel as this like popularity contest on the internet. And really glad I had a week of mostly completely offline, completely like non-digital activity, just sitting and being with myself. That was a really valuable thing for me, but I'm also so glad I had it and I have no regrets at all about using it that way, because beautiful ideas were coming up and I wanted to turn them into something lasting. And so now I can. And like I said, it's something that's going to be supportive of my practice, because now I'm going to be writing about it and kind of channeling all of my desire to post things, content, into that instead. And I won't even think of it as content. I'll think of it as practice. And I'm just so excited for this phase, especially because it won't even look or seem like that radical of a shift to, the people around me. But to me, it will feel like one. Hi, Internet friends. It's John here. Internet Friends is brought to you by my work at Ablaze Interactions, where I solve communication problems for clients who work to repair our world. I can help with information architecture to transform your website, content strategy to tell the right story and reach the right audience, and writing and editing to find the authentic voice of your company or organization, your product, or your idea. Ablaze Interactions has consulted for world-renowned events, political candidates, law firms, nonprofits, and great apps on the App Store. Light up your ideas. Go to ablaze.co and let me know if you're interested in working together.
The initial thing that I think is so interesting about that is that I feel like your experience would have been so much different if you would have had an iPhone hidden away in your room as opposed to your Apple Watch. And I think that the tendency would have been to, I don't know, maybe utilize it in ways that would have been distracting and over the top, as opposed to being kind of forced into this experience where you could only use technology for good purposes. And your life continues to be the best Apple Watch LTE ad I have ever heard of.
Yeah. Although I could have done this one with a Series Zero watch.
Yeah, you could have. You could have.
Even if like the Apple Watch didn't exist and I was just using the phone as my alarm clock, when I came back to write something, I would have spent 20 minutes writing with my thumbs.
Right.
And because I couldn't do that, I was actually able to keep the thing contained to something healthy, because it, you know, I only really had the wherewithal to scribble for a few minutes.
And this is sort of an example of the limitations of a technology being one of the major benefits of it.
Yep.
And I think that this is a limitation that makes sense for humans to have, as opposed to just saying, I can't wait to get over this. I mean, we're obviously not going to add a full keyboard onto the Apple Watch anytime soon. Although Siri may continue to get better to the point where you'll no longer have to do any thumb scribbling, and instead you could just talk directly into it and it would be so perfect. So I love that you came back with a sort of neutral feeling of technology. And you mentioned that you sort of feel like you're in this optimal space to set up new patterns if you want to. Do you have a sense of what those patterns are, or is that more vague than something that can be described?
It feels pretty clear, actually. I have had a little bit of wrestling about Facebook, because the people that I just went on retreat with and then got to spend kind of the rest of the day Sunday after the 10:30 a.m. end of the retreat, like actually talking to and getting to know, Facebook was clearly like the way these people were going to stay in touch. And so that part was hard for me, but it's already fading, not being in their presence anymore. Like, I'm sure we'll figure out ways to stay in touch. Other than that, like, first of all, the meditation part is back, way back in my life. And now that the kind of confusion between like whether to spend my morning time, you know, doing the traditional prayer service, meditating both or what, is cleared up, like, I'm really going to give myself about half an hour, maybe an hour. Maybe I'll be able to push my wake up time earlier, a little earlier, because it used to be a lot earlier than it is now. Waking up like 6:30 now, I used to get up at 5:45, and we were getting up at 5:30 on the retreat. So like, maybe I'll give myself an hour for personal practice in the mornings, and that I need to use 30 minutes of it in seated meditation. And if I have to push anything out of that time, like, that's the last thing to go. And one thing I decided at one point was that I've been mostly like doing my exercise, you know, satisfying the needs of my watch by walking a lot. And that's also where I've been doing a lot of my podcast listening, which also came up at various times in the retreat as kind of a self-defense avoid reality kind of behavior that I do, like, and so that I don't have to like talk to people in the grocery store, you know, like I soothe myself by listening to other people talking. And like, you know, you and I have talked about kind of a wake up call that maybe we're both experiencing at various times about how valuable the podcasts we listen to are. And so like, I want to keep it limited to the ones whose like conversations really matter to me in an ongoing way, and like stop listening to so many just like time filling, like Apple News recap podcasts, which I listen to now because I need to fill so much time walking. I decided to take that out and to like, you know, this is probably good. This, like, I'm going to do like a more vigorous form of exercise so that I spend less time doing that, which will take out a lot of listening time. Also, and that's at least as much the reason as like freeing up more time in my day.
Yeah.
And so that's one change that I'm going to make. And I'm going to keep this pattern of like not looking at my phone at all until after breakfast, which is the last thing in this whole morning that I want to do. Now that I'm adding this blog, I mean, I'm not like promising here and now that this is going to happen, but like, I'm pretty excited about the idea. And I want to see how easy it is for me to generate 300 words about what's coming up in my practice in a way that I think would be of general interest to meditators on an almost daily basis. You know, I want to see if I can do that. If I can, I'm going to kind of try and channel as much of my feeling productive time outside of worky work into that as I can. That and, you know, this, like having these two audio forms of like making things feels like really full and satisfying, and nothing we're doing requires any social media at all yet, I guess. Then there's work. I haven't opened my email for that yet, since the retreat, and we'll see how that's going to feel. And I really don't know what's going to happen in that part of my life as far as this goes. But I just hope, like, for now, I'll just hope that I can bring a lot more kind of patience and like a lot less reactivity and anxiety to that part of my life than I have been, thanks to the practice. And I'll just keep practicing that and, you know, compassion for my coworkers and for the participants who need things or who are mad about whatever they're mad about. That's just going to be something to work with, something that's inevitable. I might want to sit again at the end of every day. We'll see. I'm thinking 30 minutes a day is a good minimum, but like I would love to do more if I could. And that sounds like a pretty healthy pattern. The other thing that we really practiced a lot on the retreat is eating mindfully, which of course in silence is really easy to do. But there were a few other habits, like putting your fork down after you take every bite and not picking it up again until you have swallowed that bite. Like I didn't fully realize how bad at that I was. And it's a lot more interesting of an experience that way.
Mm. Yeah.
So that's something I'd like to keep doing. In some ways, nothing I'm saying sounds all that different from how I've been living, but it feels a lot more pulled together and integrated and intentional than it has been. That's what I'm looking at as far as patterns. And like, I didn't mention like reading the news or reading RSS or whatever, but like I have 600 unread RSS items right now, and I have no idea. At the end of the day, I'll probably just flip a coin, and if it's tails, I'll just mark them all as read and forget about it. None of that kind of input seems important to me right now.
That's really your major, let's call it a distraction on the phone, right? Is news, because you're not really a social network person.
I'd say Apple News is the distraction. Yeah.
Your news is my Twitter, right? I mean, those are the kind of things that pull both of us in. And I think that is a funny thing about being away from it for so long, is the reason that you're on it is because you've been on it.
Right.
And you are on it so regularly that to not be on it wouldn't make sense. But then when you're off of it for a week and you come back, you have not been on it. So now the need to be on it is lessened.
Yeah.
And it doesn't feel as important. And I think that that's such a pivotal moment in figuring out how to continue using this thing that you want to be a tool is, am I going to let this back into my life? And if I am going to let it back in my life, is there going to be a limit that was not there before? And I think that that's something that we deal with. I'm actually reading a book right now called How to Think by Alan Jacobs. And it's a person talking about how often the ways that we think our thought processes run are not the ways that they actually run.
Mm. I have also been thinking about that to some extent.
Yeah. And he kind of mentions Twitter as an example of that, where he used it for so long and really kind of decided to leave it because he thought that it was fairly poisonous to his body as opposed to being a source of sustenance. And he said something along the lines of that anybody that has a smartphone in their hand is dealing with the same issue that a prehistoric hunter-gatherer dealt with, which is that they are recognizing that isolation is deadly and solidarity is life-giving. And I think that we have to come to some real conclusions about what is actually life-giving and what isn't, because a lot of the food that we're eating is not actually sustaining us in any way. And I think it's interesting that you and I kind of came to this conclusion from complete opposite perspectives. You came to it by retreating and going and being alone. And I came to it by embracing a physical sense of community that I am now deciding to take ownership of. But I think in both of these circumstances, we've really been looking at that. What is life-giving? What is sustaining us? What is something that we want to give more of ourselves to? And what is something that we want to give less of ourselves to? And that just isn't a question that we ask ourselves enough. And we end up eating this food every day that isn't actually giving us any nourishment, but is taking all of our time and all of our attention. And that's the end of it. And so I think that looking at these extremes that we've both been going through is key to finding those answers. And I think those answers are just so worth pursuing.
Yeah, I think that's true. I'm not even sure that ways are so different ultimately. I mean, I think that community, like building real community, is the answer that we are both finding. And you know, as true as it is that I was alone in a cognitive sense for the past week, like I was also...
You were with people.
I was surrounded by people. And we all had this common motive and this supportive practice we were doing together. And like, you know, in a literal sense, we were sitting at tables in a common dining area drinking hot beverages together as a form of community too. We just weren't, you know, talking to each other.
Mm-hmm.
But we were definitely still supporting each other, even in that room. And I think that's really what we're both coming to in very similar ways, is like community as opposed to social with a capital S. People use the word community in the social media world. I think Facebook might even have it in some of their BS mission language that they use now. But obviously, it's like something that they're using for pure PR reasons to convince you that that's what it is. And you know that's not what it is because it doesn't feel like it. And when you're in real community, you don't even need to describe it because you know it's there. Because it's like, as you're saying, it's like this primal thing. It's this thing that literally helped human beings survive to become the creatures that we are, is real community. And it just has more aspects to it than, you know, the internet itself is able to provide as a substrate for it. You need something that feels like real community space. And a coffee shop is real community space. A meditation retreat is also real community space. And it's not just because you're physically in the same place. It's because you're living life together.
Yeah.
Even if it's just for like the breakfast hours, like that represents like a significant part of the daily human rhythm for each of those people. You understand what part of somebody's day they're in a coffee shop, as opposed to online in a social media environment where everybody's just supposed to be like raging at peak volume 24 hours a day. That doesn't mirror reality. It's not real life. I keep saying that and then realizing like I wrote an entire book saying that it is real life, but it's not real life. It's a simulacrum of life that has no rhythm, no biorhythm to it. And that's what I think is so cool about like the coffee shop as a slice of being alive.
Yeah.
You know, it's like the waking up part. And I'm just having been meditating for a week. I'm really into waking up in all dimensions.